So I'm talking to Michael Meadows, who is over from Griffith University in Brisbane, in Australia. Michael, Professor Michael Meadows, is a rare beast in academia. He is exceptionally good at working with radio practitioners to do meaningful research, which then gets shared around the industry. And we're hoping it's going to start happening here in the UK. But we're really pleased to include you on the toolkit for this Prove It feature. Have I missed anything about you, Michael?
Oh, no, I think that's probably enough to,
fine,
to set the scene.
Well, the obvious question I would ask you is, are audience figures everything?
Definitely not, because they don't tell us how people listen and why they listen. They can tell us numbers and we can break them down into demographics, but again, it doesn't tell us why people do it, and it doesn't tell us anything about the intensity of listening patterns. If someone says they listen, they could just listen when they're working in their workshop doing other things, whereas others might be glued to the radio listening to a particular program, absolutely engrossed with it. So I think qualitative research enables us to delve down into those how and why questions much more so than quantitative research. But, you know, to be fair, they work well together.
You've talked a lot about the how and why, and in your view, why is research both qualitative and quantitative? Why is it important for community radio audiences, for the stations?
Well, I think the stations need to have some evidence to present to potential sponsors and to government agencies when it comes to maybe reviewing their licence conditions and so on. I think they need to have some evidence there to say, well, this is what our station is doing and this is what people say about us. This is why people listen. This is how they listen. Numbers, of course, can be helpful in that regard, but I think to meet the social inclusion or the social benefits test, I suppose, that community radio in the UK must meet, stations really have to delve into those questions, because otherwise, how do you show it? You can't show it just by saying X number of people listen. But if people are saying, I listen because it's made a difference to my life, it's helped me to network with like-minded people or like-minded communities, it's helped me to settle in the UK, it's helped me to better understand other cultures, they're the kind of things that you can get from qualitative research, which simply doesn't come with numbers.
And inevitably, they're the things that are going to mean the most to funding bodies, and being able to prove that in some way is just gold dust to stations.
Well, absolutely, and I think that while numbers can be useful in going to a sponsor and saying, you know, 10,000 people listening to our station, therefore we can charge so much per hour or so much per second for ads, if you can go to particular sponsors and say, well, we've found that there's a really good crossover between maybe the Muslim and non-Muslim community are in this station's listening area. So if you want to extend your product to include the Muslim audience, which you previously maybe haven't thought about, here's your opportunity. Mm-hmm. So it really helps stations to outline the diversity of their audiences and, I think, underline the power of knowing the diversity.
Okay. Michael gave a presentation which I attended, which was fascinating, and talked very much about a very special relationship between the station, the makers and the producers and the audiences. Those lines are very thinly drawn. And how do community radio stations place a value on this special relationship as opposed to concentrating on the hard figures?
Well, I think that in many ways that, for me, defines community radio. It's this lack of barrier between the audiences and the producers. Mm. In traditional broadcasting like BBC or, you know, ITV, television, but radio, commercial radio, there's not much chance for any of us as listeners to talk back. We don't like a program, we ring up, they take our name, thank you very much, you know, if you're really concerned about this, write a letter, here's the address to send it to, but really very few people follow through with those kind of things. And in the end, do they make a difference? I don't think so. So community radio doesn't have that kind of barrier. It's almost like a mechanism to stop people getting access to the program making process, whereas community radio is the exact opposite. You know, community radio needs people to become active in the program making process, and interacting with audiences is a key element of that. So I think that in the research that we've done in Australia, and certainly based on evidence from other places around the world, particularly since 2000, around about the turn of the new millennium, there's been a really huge increase in the numbers of books and articles and scholarly academic works written about community radio. So we do know a lot more now the last 10 years than we've known the previous perhaps two decades, because it is quite a young sort of area. But we do know that it does make a difference to communities, and so we need to know about what kind of a difference it is making. And one of the defining characteristics that myself and colleagues have argued is that this lack of a barrier between audiences and producers is a key to understanding what community radio actually is.
So everything you've talked about is nothing to do with output. It isn't about the final programme. And so when output isn't everything, and there are other beneficial social outcomes for community radio, how are these best captured? How can radio stations tell this story?
I think they've really got to look at ways of, clever and simple ways of gathering information about their audiences. And it can be done by, for example, just having a simple, questionnaire next to the phone. So someone rings the station and they chat away. Oh, how long have you been listening? Mind just answering a couple of quick questions. And so, what do you like best about the station? What do you like most about it? Five or six questions done with, every caller. Some people won't want to do it, but most people will answer a very quick questionnaire and just keep a log of, when those people rang. You could maybe get some basic demographics. Obviously you could tell it's a male or female, usually. You could even ask for their rough age group. I mean, that would help the station to find out a little bit about, who's calling in, what do they think, what do they want to see change, what do they like, what don't they like. So that's a fairly quick and simple way of just getting information from people who ring the station directly.
And that's very cheap and doesn't cost anything.
That's right.
It's just about building that process in.
And I think volunteers can, be briefed on doing that, to make sure that they just write down a couple of short comments that people make. There could even be a few boxes they could tick, what do you like about it, and there could be some standard answers that you could predict and to make it faster, or anything else you want to say about the station, and they can write that down. And I think that sort of qualitative data can be invaluable in putting in applications for license renewal. You can quote that material and say these are comments made by some recent callers to the station, and then you can quote three or four different points of view that underline the importance of the station to those people.
Okay, that's a very simple way, and Janie is going to hopefully supply something on focus groups. You use focus groups, and it is a wonderful tool. Can you talk just very briefly about that as another tool for carrying out research? Because that's an academic tool, but it can be done within a station. But when you don't have a lot of resources and you've maybe got one or two studios, how could you manage that process?
Yeah, there are ways of doing it, and while it is it's used in sociology and the humanities for research, it's also used by commercial radio stations to gauge their audience's views of new music forms, the station image, and all those kinds of things. So it's used quite widely in the broadcasting industry now, but for very narrow commercial ends. But really, the method that we devised for our community radio study in Australia in 2006-2007 was based on, it's a basic way of, the most difficult thing to do in audience research is to identify the audience. And we use the stations to do that, because what better way of inviting people to participate in a focus group be to use the stations to put out a broadcast and say, if you'd like to take part in a discussion about the station, you're a listener, we'd like to hear from you. If you're interested, ring this number, leave your name and details at the switch, and we'll get in touch with you in a couple of weeks, let you know whether we'll pick people at random, say 6 to 10 people is usually a good number. Come in and we'll give some cup of tea and some biscuits, and you can sit around and let's just talk about the station. So organising those people is important. The second element of that is to make sure that get someone to ring them back and say, try to confirm that they will be coming to the station and have it at the station. Have a, you know, there's usually a meeting room somewhere at most stations. Have it there. That way people can get a look at the station as well.
Yes.
They feel a part of it, which they already do because they're ringing up and wanting to be part of the discussion. Then I think it's important to organise somebody who could be seen as a kind of an independent person to conduct the focus group. It could be maybe someone knows a local teacher from a school, someone from a local uni, academic, you know, working in media. I mean, most people can, with fairly minimal, you know, training, come and facilitate a focus group. And the way that we tend to do it is to initially just ask people around the group, you know, why they're here. What's so important about coming along and talking about this station? So people identify what they think is important. That can be written on a board, and then you can go back through those topics one by one, and other people will chip in and add bits. And so you start to get a whole range of discussion around what do people like about the station, what don't they like. And there could be specific questions you want to ask as well, but by inviting people to set the agenda, you're making them a part of the research process, and they've got some ownership over the direction it takes. Record all of that. It can be transferred. Normally, 1.5-2 hours is enough for people. Usually talked out. Sometimes it might be shorter than that. Just, you know, gauge how it goes, and then get a transcription of the discussion. And then it's really a matter of, I suppose, sitting around looking through the comments and really trying to group the comments, identify specific themes that people are talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Are people talking about, for example, why they listen? And so there may be a whole lot of different responses from different people at why they listen, so you can pull all those out. How do they listen? Are they in the car? Are they in the, you know... what is it? And someone might say there might be specific comments then about how it changed their lives, how it introduced them to new people, new communities. So all of those quotes can be extracted from the discussion. And again, it's this really powerful information that can be used by stations to in their, you know, promotional material. You know, maybe a quote from someone from the focus group might be, you know, something to become a slogan for the station. And it can be used to go to sponsors and say, this is what people say about our station. This is why they listen. This is what they want to hear.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that is perhaps a bit more involved, but I think it can be kept, you know, fairly simply. And if stations did that maybe, you
twice
know, once a year, twice
yeah.
a year.
Build it in as a small event.
And then, you know, report the findings back to the audience. Say, okay, we had our focus group, you know, 2 months ago. We've now had a chance to go through it, and these are our findings. You know, people generally like the station, but they want to see more of this. And you know, one of our listeners had this to say. And you'd need to get permission to use people's voices, but that might be a powerful way of getting the information back out to the audience. If you've got permission from the participants to say, "Is that okay if we use your voice?" We won't identify you. I mean, they'll know who they are. Their friends might, but as long as they're not defaming anybody. You know, it might be a nice little package to put together. Here are some comments that people made about our station, some audio grabs of...
And hearing those voices actually may elicit a much greater participation
it
the
does.
Next time and a greater conversation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And people say, gee, I want to be a part of this focus group next time. So I think that having regular things like that can build up an archive of evidence about, you know, the station and about specific directions the station's going in to say, yeah, the audience likes this or they don't. I mean, one focus group is probably not enough to really tell you exactly what a station's doing, but over time it can give the station some valuable information about, you know, the basic, are we connecting with our community? What are people getting out? What do they say they're getting out of the station? What do they? How has it changed their lives, if at all? So they're really important questions to know the answers to.
Michael, thank you very much. I'm going to make the toolkit as available on the website when you return from your travels here.
Fantastic.
And I'll get a copy of PDF. But Michael's other research will be made available. And thanks so much for your time.
A pleasure. Thanks, Ellie.